Oh yeah, welcome to the Christmas edition of the, really it's a simulcast of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where pimp stands for permaculture is my passion. Also got on my boys, the Texas Boys. Remember, go check out texasboys.com and get all of that cool merch they got over there. Some of which being, I know it's got to be pretty popular right now, and it is almost certainly that food forest in a box. The only people I know of on planet Earth that probably have such a thing. Not going to talk about the other advertisers today because we're going to jump right into it. Hey, I know a lot of people out there don't necessarily participate in the holiday festivities that some people call Christmas. And a lot of people like us and also the Texas Boys don't really get into it much themselves. And maybe we'll get into that with them. And also a lot of the questions that you guys are almost certainly going to have. We don't necessarily have a schedule. We're probably going to go, whenever you get me and TD and Matt in the room, things are probably going to go a little bit esoteric and maybe a little bit crazy for a lot of people out there. Hey guys, how y'all doing? Oh, shoot. Why don't you tell everybody about your podcast? Hey, if you don't know, these guys are probably the most suppressed people on YouTube without a doubt, but they picked out and they started a balling podcast. Why don't you tell everybody about it and where they can find it?
So we are the Fearless Podcast, and you can find us on all your podcatchers, the Fearless Podcast. I think we have about 25 episodes that have dropped. We got a lot of great interviews coming up. So subscribe, leave us a review. We appreciate it. We love the podcast. We love doing all the social media stuff, and we really appreciate Billy and what he's doing. So we're really excited to be on tonight.
Well, I'm excited to be on with you. I don't know that it's necessarily, we're simulcasting this, y'all. So by the way, if you got any questions on anything that pops up, anything that's on your mind, leave it in the chat. Try to put it in big letters because this doggone computer is so far away from me. I know Matt's young eyes can probably see it, but old timers like me and TD are probably going to have a little trouble seeing that. So if you would put it in capital letters, if you got anything, a lot of holiday wishes from a lot of people out there. Some folks saying shalom, some saying Merry Christmas. And probably some out there almost certainly saying bah humbug or as they wrote in the Dickens novel, you know, Scrooge, he was something of a Malthusian. Let's just start right there, man, before we get into it. Ebenezer Scrooge was kind of something of a Malthusian populationalist. Okay, so what I'm going to basically explain there's a line, if I remember correctly, they're asking Scrooge to donate money to feed the poor. And his response is, in fact, if I remember it correctly, it's like, sir, would you donate money to buy the poor meat and drink? He says, nah, bah humbug. You know, we need to decrease the surplus population anyway. Sounds a lot like Thomas Malthus from way back. And if you look at him, who he was involved with, the East India Company and all that. Sure is funny that he spent all that around Christmas. But, hey, so I'm going to kick it on over. Hey, by the way, y'all, if you haven't already, hit that thumbs up. It tells them immediately to go ahead and start suppressing us. So we want to make sure we get that covered right off the bat. So so are you a Scrooge, Matt, and TD, or are you guys just not into Christmas?
Well, you know, we studied it out biblically as Christians and just studying it out. And I've heard all of the sermons that kind of like invoke Christmas and tell you why it's so great and you should celebrate it every day. But if we study it out, you know, the scriptures say if we're going to worship God, we must worship him in spirit and in truth. So we came under the conviction probably about 10 years ago prior to that, we were incredibly disenchanted with the ultra commercialization of it. And prior to when we stopped celebrating, we definitely kicked it down and we stopped buying gifts and all these different things. And then we decided during the Christmas season, we would go on a family vacation to just kind of avoid all of it. But then 10 years ago, we said, you know what, we're just going to officially stop celebrating. Now, prior to that, we did celebrate it. We're not like, do you know you're worshiping the Baal bush and Satan and all this stuff? No, we don't do any of that. We are very gracious with other people, where they are in their walk, and we're all learning. And so we're very kind. And even to be pragmatic, I even used to be really like, I'm never going to say Merry Christmas. Like if someone has a nice gesture to me says, like for example, yesterday our elderly neighbor stopped by, great friend, and he went down the row of boys and he shook everybody's hand and he said Merry Christmas. And yeah. I said Merry Christmas, Mr. Dan. And because I know how he was intending it, and sure.
Out of love.
Yeah, out of love.
And that's everyone.
Sure. Yeah. And I didn't want to disrespect him. I don't want to disrespect, you know, we're all learning at different paces and we're all different ages. And so we can be gracious. You don't have to be like this, like hair on fire zealot. You don't have to be the Grinch that stole Christmas, no. But we can still educate. We still don't have to violate our conscience. You know, we don't have to fabricate and like massage, you know, massage Baal and, you know, and Isis. And we don't have to worship all these Greek gods in a reconformed way, you know, using the evergreen Christmas tree and the light and all the shenanigans. I get really frustrated when you hear preachers and theologians placate to it and massage it and make it a thing when it's just not. So, you know, it's one thing if you want to celebrate it. You know, the scriptures say, learn not the way of the heathen. And when you read that Jeremiah stuff and they're cutting down a tree and they're fastening it and they're decorating it with gold and silver, you're just like, that does sound an awful lot like a Christmas tree, you know? And we do like set it up in our house so it doesn't move. We put the presence under it so that we have to bow down to. There's all the symbolism, and you know, I correlate it to when you praise the Lord. You know, there are I'm definitely not this new ager CCM like smoke and lights and all this stuff, right? And I have this conversation a lot with one of the guys at work, and he was like, you know, well, this is our culture, man. Like this is where we're at. And I'm like, well, you know, when Moses was up on the mountain, you know, rewriting writing the Ten Commandments the first time, and he comes down to a rock concert, you know, Aaron could have said, hey, man, this is just the culture. I mean, this is the way the way they worship God now. Right. Mm-hmm. And that didn't quite cut it for Moses. He kind of smashed the Ten Commandments. He ground it into powder and he made him drink it. So I think that's kind of how I think when we try to take these pagan things and conform them into something godly, it makes God mad. I mean, because if it's not a truth, if it's not truth, if it's a lie, and you're willing to tell your child that Santa isn't real, you might as well just tell them that none of it is historically accurate. And, you know, the book of Revelation is the revelation of Jesus Christ. And people want to be enamored with the book of Revelation too, but it's all about the revelation of Christ. They want to focus on Antichrist. They want to focus on all this mayhem and the mark and all these different things, but it's the revelation of Christ. And I think when it comes to Christmas, we're not commanded to celebrate his birth. And we certainly aren't commanded to co-opt the pagan holiday to celebrate his birth. You know, Jesus doesn't need to adopt a pagan holiday to celebrate his birth. And it's all based in Catholicism. And that's what the Catholics did. The Catholics took Christianity, they took paganism, they morphed them together. And that's how you got Christmas. And it is called Christ Mass. And the word mass means death. So that's my Christmas spiel in 8 minutes.
No, I don't know that I could add anything to it, because the journey for us was almost exactly, man, this gets scary every single time I hang out with you guys, because it's like every single benchmark that has happened in your life has also happened in ours. And that's, it was exactly right. The same way where I think what got me first was the commercialism. You know, these days go into Lowe's in the middle of summer and they're putting out Christmas trees already. It's aggravating. I mean, Matt, now I gotta know from, I want to hit good night, TD. Why'd you open this can of worms, man? Because I can't walk away from it. Now, before I go to Matt real quick, I want to ask, I just want to add to it for the people out there that are saying, well, I need some substantiation. Well, there was a book called The Two Babylons written by Alexander Hislop, and basically confirms everything TD just said. Now, in addition to that, now, folks, hear me out here. And by the way, there's a lot of awesome conversation in the chat. Everything from Satan Claus to, oh, good night. There was a lot of stuff that just apparently went on by. By the way, if you're new coming in, hit the like button. Tells everybody to suppress, to tell the powers that shouldn't be to suppress us. But yeah, in the Two Babylons, he even talks about things like Easter and how under Constantine, all these holidays basically got their roots, and how Easter was a celebration of the goddess Ishtar all the way back to Babylon. That's why the book was called The Two Babylons. It's exactly why they tried to eradicate it from the planet. And in there, the whole thing with the bunnies and the fertility and Easter, like I said, Ishtar, every single overlay to all these holidays. When I started to learn all this, I'm like, man, I really don't want anything to do with it. I know people call it Resurrection Day, but I'm one that believes that Jesus didn't. Boy, I'm gonna open up a can of worms here, but I don't believe he ascended. I don't believe he rose from the dead on Sunday. I think he did it on the Sabbath, and that's another conversation altogether. I think it was actually on Saturday. You know, boy, we're dropping manhole covers right off the bat, man. I can't wait to see the hate mail. But everything you just said there can be absolutely substantiated. I'm bringing up the Two Babylons, but there are other contemporaries that have said exactly the same thing regarding the same thing, whether it was Easter, Christmas, not so much, but definitely Easter, and how he describes it in 312 AD under Constantine, that you had these, that Constantine, the Roman emperor, basically said, okay, we got these factions over here. We got this faction over here. Oh, shoot, I know what we can do. Let's put them all together. Let's take the best elements of all of them and then create this thing. And then from there, that's where it all began. And it was irrefutable for many, many years. Let me get on over to Matt real quick, because I got to ask him, because I could ask William the same question regarding this. But there was a point where we said, okay, everybody in our families, we're not buying any more gifts. I think that's where it started. And then I use the example of like, hey, look at Little House on the Prairie. Pa was pretty doggone happy when they gave him a pair of socks. And here it is, we're buying everybody this G.I. Joe with a Kung Fu grip. And kids are more, you know, ready to play with a box than they are actually the thing it came in. But I wanted to know what it was like. How did you and your brothers respond when mom and dad said, hey, you know what? Christmas is out, nephew. How did it go for y'all?
Well, what they did is they showed us a bunch, like some really good documentaries, and they were like, here's the truth. You know, this is why we think Christmas is satanic, like literally. And then they were like, just so you know, and we were like, well, why? And you know, those are all good questions. So they were like, here you go. Here's the proof and the truth. And then we were able to make up our minds about it. And, you know, we kept studying into it and doing loads of research about it. We're like, yeah, it's pretty dang satanic. And then, you know, with all the Catholic Church stuff and everything, and then trying to make it Christian and everything like that, Christianese smear on it. But, you know, I think the one nice thing that was nice is because we kind of eased out of it. You know, we stopped doing Christmas, and then we started just going on a family vacation just to get away from all the stress. And mainly it's just the stress. Like, we had so much stress during Christmas. I don't really remember it too much because I was so young at the time, but
we canceled Christmas on Matt when he was 8.
Yeah.
So now he's 18, so,
and 10 years later.
That's why he's disgruntled and angry.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, but anyway, so, and we still go on our annual family vacation every year. And I don't know. I don't miss it. I don't miss any of the stress. I have friends that do it. And I have no hate against them for doing it. And you know, it's the whole stress of got to buy somebody a gift or whatever. And, the thing is that we do caring stuff for each other all year long. I'm not going to wait for this specific time of year to give to you. If you need a power drill, I'm going to give it to you right now because you need it right now. So that, you know, for me personally, it wasn't that bad. You know, also I was 8 years old, so I didn't know much. So I guess it would be different if you were an older teen or something like that, maybe, and you were doing like Christmas to the nines, you know, and all decked out and everything, because people down here in the South do Christmas on a whole nother level. It's Christmas in the bathroom, Christmas all over the house. I mean, it's crazy. It's nuts. And they're super into it, man. And anyway, yeah. So if you came from that and then like stopped, I could totally see how it would be rough, like a rough transition. But since we really just kind of eased out of it, like every year started doing less and less and less, it was pretty easy to stop.
Are there any holidays you do celebrate, or are you kind of like, hey, I'm out of all of them?
Pretty much just Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we celebrate Thanksgiving, and we know how some have tried to tie that to sure. like Native American massacres and different things. There are multiple Thanksgivings that were set as holidays. So
and it's like we loosely say celebrate to right. Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we are incredibly thankful to God.
Of course.
And while we do understand the occulted history of America and the dubious men like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin that were and Illuminati such that were used to found the country, we are also very acutely aware of George Washington, which many people don't know. At one time, apparently George Washington was a Freemason, but John Gano was a Baptist preacher, and he was also in Washington's army, and he did baptize George Washington as a Bible-believing Christian. I believe that's when George Washington denounced Freemasonry. So while there is this occulted history of America, there is the hand of Christianity. And like I always point to the Leland Madison Memorial, you know, our Bill of Rights was basically written by John Leland, a Baptist preacher. And James Madison came to him and he said, John, I need your support. And John said, here's what I'll do. There are these Bill of Rights. We need this to amend it to the Constitution. We need this in our Constitution. And if you will tote this ball and take it over the line, I'll support you. If you will not, I will run against you and defeat you. And so these are, you know, the Bill of Rights, these enumerated God-given rights that are written on paper were taken from scripture by John Leland and enumerated, handed to James Madison. And that's where our Bill of Rights comes from. So while there is this occulted history, there is also an active history of Christians that live a righteous life and resist and are, they don't just go along to get along, but they live out their faith and they have been able to impact the culture and impact society for the greater grace, for the greater good of the gospel.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to push back a little bit on George Washington, because if I'm not mistaken, he was actually buried with all of his regalia and even dedicated the White House in his regalia. I know that whoever really knows for sure at the end of the day, I mean, whether he was or wasn't, but honestly, there's so many different things, because I remember going down this same path. Boy, we're getting warm now. People are, if they could throw rocks at us right now, yeah, virtual rocks, but hey, we're keeping it real and we're keeping it as honest as I know how. I mean, if you just look at DC, go to, for example, Jefferson. And by the way, I was the world's biggest Jefferson fan once upon a time. I was also a world's biggest Ben Franklin, maybe all of the founding fathers, but especially people like, Samuel Adams, you know. He was the one that really got the revolution kicked off, you know, and I love his quote, and I use it all the time. Wherever I get into some nasty disagreement with somebody that refuses to think, and I just say, instead of just, you know, doing what most people do and throw out a bunch of profanity, I just say, may your chain set lightly upon you. Mm-hmm. And that's the quote, of course, Samuel Adams. And by the way, I think that's a much better way of telling somebody to go take a hike. But going back, you know, you can go to the Library of Congress and go look up the most approved plan, which was when they were trying to figure out how to lay out DC. There was a guy, it was eventually given to a guy named LaFont, and he's a French dude, of course. And Jefferson, the reason why they call it Capitol Hill is because it was modeled after Rome's Capitoline Hill, which was basically a pantheon of all the Roman gods. And it is right there in the most approved plan that Jefferson even said that we are to model this country after basically the Roman pantheon. Everybody wants to look past that. But there it is. I mean, it's plain as day, and it's right there in the Library of Congress. You look
Jefferson is also the one that got the great seal, you know, the all-seeing Illuminati eye on the back of the $1 bill. You know, the legend goes that somebody dropped that off or whatever and just so magically appeared on the back of our currency. But that was also Jefferson was participated in that as well.
Well, go on right back to those roots in the country that nobody ever wants to talk about. Like, for example, in every dome, look across from it and you're going to see an obelisk. Mm-hmm. And it's no accident. It goes all the way back to the rising of the sun god ritual, all the way back to ancient Egypt. And I could go through and explain, because some of it gets a little bit, I mean, if there are kids listening right now, it's going to be a little bit too far to push them. But basically, that same ritual that was done in ancient Egypt is still done by the Scottish Rite Freemason Temple right there in D.C. every single time a new president is inaugurated. At the same time, right there in the Herodome at the Scottish Rite's Temple in D.C., they are doing the Rising of Osiris ritual at the same time, hoping that that new president is going to be the new, that will ultimately they'll get it right, and then he'll wind up being the modern day sun god. I mean, what? Everything, from the layout to the obelisk to the dome, which is supposed to represent Isis pregnant belly. All of this stuff is right there in black and white, but everybody wants to tell me, oh, we were founded on this, we were founded on that. But the more I investigate, the more I examine, the more I'm finding out that everything, and TD, Matt, I am dead serious when I say that, the only thing I am 100% sure of is Jesus is exactly who he said he was. Everything else, even the sun, the planets, you name it, all the way down to gravity, I am questioning everything. And I have questioned everything. Well, I haven't questioned everything, but I'm saying because I have examined it and I have found no contradiction, Jesus is exactly who he says he is. I'll hand it over to you.
Amen.
Well, I would say that that's a strong foundation to stand on.
definitely.
And as those that listen to the podcast would know, we had Philip Stott on, and he is a geocentrist. And, you know, we do hold a geocentricity. And while that isn't a flat earth, that is a stationary earth. So, you know, I don't really believe in gravity either. I believe that there is a force that they used to refer to as the ether that presses against everything and keeps everything. And I believe that's easily explainable from scripture, is God spoke and it was, you know, and it says, by the word of his power, all things consist, you know, and I believe that everything is held in place. And when he decides that it's not going to be held in place any longer, it won't be. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely great to question everything, analyze everything, look at everything, step back, you know, because Billy, me and you, we were raised in government schools, man. So we were completely brainwashed, whether we want to think that we were or not, we were completely and utterly brainwashed. And the beauty of, you know, why we chose to homeschool our children is we wanted to break them free from the Prussian model and break them free from the brainwash and teach them and allow them to learn at their own pace and draw their own conclusions. God has no grandchildren, right? And train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old he shall not depart from it. And I believe that that's a true promise, but God has no grandchildren, and my children have to come to faith in Christ the exact same way that I did. And I can't do it for them. And in that same method, you know, our children have to learn all their own things, you know? So we approach it. We're parents, we train them, we guide them, we protect them, we shelter them, but we give them the latitude to learn, right? And to grow and to mature and to decide for themselves. Yes, I believe that. I hold to that. I believe that is true. And I mean, Matt could get married to a fine, beautiful young lady and they could grow up and say, "Hey, you know what? We're going to celebrate Christmas, man." And if they do that, I'm not going to hate on them for that. It's their life. They have to make their own decisions. We have lots of convictions and, you know, we've had different convictions in the past that have changed as well, you know, and we all grow in the grace and knowledge of God and we all learn and we all, try, fail, and adjust. And we, for that reason, we should give everyone grace, to grow. Right. And we shouldn't just be like crushing them all the time and dropping the truth hammer on them. I'll gladly share with them. I will not sugarcoat it. I won't short step it. I will bring it straight forward as best as I can because society, the castration of masculinity and just the destruction of the patriarchy and the feminization of men has everybody's supposed to be like Mr. Rogers and wear a sweater and tiptoe around everything and not hurt anybody feels. Well, I definitely want to live a life that's antithetical to
more
that.
Like Pee Wee Herman though.
Yeah.
Not Mr. Rogers. A couple more steps.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers was pretty masculine compared to the modern day beta. Yeah. But but you know, I do want to one thing that now I am learning Parhesia. I am learning to communicate better.
Yes.
But one thing that I never wanted to do is like I don't want to spend 15 minutes prefacing what I'm going to say for the sake of like okay, to have the greatest reach, let me preface this. No, just say it. And the truth will be self-evident, right? The truth will present itself. The truth will be self-evident. Mm-hmm. And if people get offended, they can figure it out. They can get unoffended. They can grow. They can change. Now, that doesn't mean I'm always saying it right the first time or anything, but I appreciate people that just say it. Ernie Hancock. He says it all the time. Say it. Just say it. And that's what just say it, dude. Don't spend 15 minutes like, okay, for all you women out there. You got beautiful hair. And please don't. This is very common on social media. The guys, when they vlog and they talk like this they got a lisp and they. They talk real fast. It's so cute. Look at that.
Talk, or how about that? The up talk where they're making a declarative sentence, but they're saying it in the form of a question. Like, what are we talking about? The Old Testament? Are we talking about the Bible? Are we talking about Christmas? They'll make a declarative sentence, but they're saying it in the form of a question. And I don't even know what they're saying. Or the one I love, the vocal fry where they got to talk like this or... The vocal fry and the up talk makes you look
man.
Like you, TD. I'm going through a bunch of classes myself. I mean, I'm constantly learning, and I know Matt is. I mean, it's just awesome to see the growth in him and really all of us. But the real truth of it is, as I'm going through and I'm listening to modern vocal coaches because I'm getting certain training on certain things, and they're telling you, right, modern guys are saying, do the up talk, do the vocal fry, do the lisp, and you are 100% guaranteed that the person on the other side of you is looking at you as very weak, and it's programmed. It's hardwired into you. It's not like we're from Australia where they generally use uptalk when they communicate with one another. It's not a cultural thing in the United States of Amnesia. But all of a sudden, it is now. And I'm like, when a kid comes up and says to me, and they're asking, I know what they're doing, and I'll say, was that a question? When they do the uptalk, I'm like, is that a question? Come on, man. Talk to me like a man. Make a declarative statement and don't say like, oh, I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to go to the store. Are you asking me? What is it? I'm sorry, bro. I didn't mean to take you off your point, but man, you can ask Michelle at least once a week. I'm going to go off on hearing somebody use the vocal fry, the lisp, or the uptalk.
That is spot on. And it irritates me and it aggravates me. And I believe, and I know, you know, what I model to my boys. Like, look, if I danced around the house in a tutu and talked like that every day, I would have a bunch of little effeminate Nancys that would do the same thing.
Yeah.
And so therefore, if we model what real men should be and how real men should talk and how real men should act, people are so fascinated. Your kids are incredible. They look me in the eye. They give me a firm handshake, you know? And well, that's what men do. That's what men used to do. Yeah. You know, if you watch an old Western, I don't know what to tell you, but like they didn't do the up talk and they didn't wear a tutu and they didn't have rainbow socks, you know, and they weren't wearing loafers, you know? And because like there's no time to loaf.
Yeah.
Life's too short for loafers, man. You got to wear work boots.
Mm. How do you, you know, I've just once in my life, I mean, I don't watch TV, but, you know, every once in a while, Michelle and I might sit down and, you know, especially this time of year and watch something. And the thing that floors me in all of this is just once in my life, let's say it's a music show, like let's say American Idol. It's always some dude that's going to come out. He's going to sashay out and he's probably going to be in ballerina slippers and sing Good Ship Lollipop. Just once in my life, I want to hear him. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage, Butch. And he's going to sing a Joe Cocker tune just once in my life. I'd love to see that. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, let me swing back a little bit. I want to ask Matt something about what we were talking about a moment ago, because these are topics that by and large, the American public, most of us just don't. Like you said, you and I, TD, were raised in the Matrix. We still had that little thing in the back of our head that shows that we escaped the Matrix, but we were brought up in it. And, you know, everybody probably before us as well. Your boys, like mine, for the most part, was born on the outside of the Matrix. Now, I got to ask, Matt, now, regarding some of these topics that you and your dad are talking about, like, okay, regarding heliocentricity or whatever the case may be, number one, are you even able to have these conversations with other people your age? And if you do, what's the general thought? I mean, have they thought of anything that hasn't been programmed into them for the most part?
I'm trying to think. Most of the time, I've actually been talking to, I've had a couple conversations of recently with some people on a forum, and that is the autonomy forum. And that one's really good. And it's a lot of, it's not a lot of, there's only a handful of younger kids like me, not even my age, like in their 20s or so, that are starting to unplug. And I've been able to actually talk to them, and they're, you know, either anti-college and they're, you know, pro going out, getting a real job or working for yourself. But other than that, the majority of kids out there, it's, you know, it does sadden me, because I'll go out there to, like, you know, stop in like a bigger city and something and see the majority of the younger people. And it's, you know, they got those, you walk into Walmart or whatever, and you just got like sloppily put together with your shoes on and your pajama pants. And then you talk like a, well, I can't say that, but you talk all feminine and everything like that. And, it's terrible. And I'm like, and someday you're going to be 30 years old or 40 years old, and you're my dad's and replacement. Like, you're going to be in his shoes and have to make all the same decisions. And, you know, it's going to be a scary time to be alive, because I'm like, this guy doesn't even, like, can't even tie his shoes in the morning, can't even cook himself breakfast in the morning. How is he going to be able to make the world a better place? He's not. So that's really why every time we go to a job and we show up and people are like, oh my goodness, like, y'all actually are like accountable. You show up on time. You know, we can look you in the eye. We can, you know, when you say something, your word is your bond, you know? So that's totally been lost. Like, if I say something or other people tell me something, you know, it's in and out. They don't mean it. But when I tell you something, you know, that's what it is, you know, and that's what I believe. So all that to say, yeah, mainly the majority of kids out there, I don't waste my breath on them, really. I'll be nice to you. You know, if you ask me a question, I'll answer it. But if you're like got this girl t-shirt on with skinny little pant, you know, little pants on, I don't know what to do with you. Like, you know, you're so off the deep end, you know, but
all they're going to want to talk about are pop culture, movies and sports. Yeah, I mean, that's the depth that you're going to get out of them.
Yeah.
That seems to be the same thing with our generation as well. Entertainment or sports, if it weren't entertainment and sports, it was nearly impossible. Mm. Now I can, to a certain extent, I can have something of a conversation on that, but that's not the way I'm wired. But if it weren't entertainment or sports, you know, I remember one guy and he would say, you know, hey, nobody drives my truck. This is my truck, blah, blah, blah. And he would go on about his truck all the time. And then, you know, it occurred to me, he caught me bad on one day and I knew a little bit. I knew the guy would talk about his home problems and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, do you find it curious? You go on about this truck of yours. You don't let anybody drive your truck, but you just let a total stranger watch your kid. You know, and then, of course, I might as well have been speaking. I mean, he had gotten on my nerves so much that I was willing to burn that bridge. But I was like, dude, you got your kid out there. You're telling me that he's coming home with all these crazy ideas. I think it was Malcolm X that said only a fool would allow his enemy to raise his kid. I'm paraphrasing, but you definitely get it. I mean, there was other things I didn't agree with. But honestly, if a notorious liar tells the truth, it's still the doggone truth, no matter what. But this guy he did all of this research. I knew another guy would do tons and tons of research on the next truck he's going to buy. Meanwhile, he's got a suicidal son who's been brainwashed by these lunatics calling themselves teachers in the public school and try to offer some books to him and say, hey, you know, this is, at the time, I remember it was a James Dobson book or something like it. Like, hey, you want to look at this? You'll go through, I don't know how many trade magazines to figure out your next vehicle, but you can't read a single book to maybe get to the bottom of why your son is suicidal. Yeah. We know the price of everything and the value of nothing. I mean, it's what it's always been. But hey, let me kick it back. I gotta tell you guys, I didn't know this was actually going to come up in conversation. Didn't steer it that way, but honestly, I'm studying through the book of Joshua right now.
Okay.
One of the things I came across today, and I'm going to kick it right back to you. We're going to get deep, y'all. So stay tuned. Here it is. Now, TD said something earlier I'm just going to hit on. I just pulled it up right here. Joshua 10, 12. Then spake Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, Son, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. So tell me if I'm crazy here. And this is, we're talking, how many references do you see in the Psalms of the earth being on a foundation? How many foundations move? I don't know of any. And here it is. He didn't say, hey, earth stay still. Joshua asked, he's like, sun stand still. So,
there's a famous, there's a famous sermon by an ex-slave pastor, and the name of the sermon is The Sun Do Move.
Don't say that again.
There's a famous title to a famous sermon called The Sun Do Move. Oh. And, you know, the premise is that, yeah, the sun runs in a circuit. According to scripture, the sun and the moon have their own circuit, so they move. From a geocentric position, the earth is the center of creation and the rest of creation revolve around it, you know, in different circuits. And here where we see from scripture, you know, many people will explain it away. Well, from our point of view, you know, from our point of view, it looks like the sun is standing still. And there's a fancy theological word that they use to explain it away, and I forget what that's called. But if you read it from a biblical perspective, the sun stood still, which means the sun didn't move, you know. And then, you know, scientism would say, well, if the sun stood still and the earth doesn't move, gravity. But what the thing is if you study it out and you read the different, Tycho Brahe and you know, several other geocentrists, even when you read heliocentric guys, they'll say, yeah, you know, it's really hard to explain how, you know, because if when you run these certain tests, it certainly looks like the Earth isn't moving. And so it is not this foregone conclusion that the Earth certainly is not spinning at 666,000 miles an hour or whatever that nonsense is. Clearly and obviously, the Earth isn't however many millions of miles away that they say it is from the sun, because these are observable things that we can disprove with very basic mathematical calculations and basic human observation. Now, for me, the reason why I don't hold to a flat Earth is because of lunar eclipses and solar eclipses, because I've seen both lunar and solar eclipses. And from my perspective, it certainly appears to me like the Earth is round, like a ball, similarly shaped, just like the moon is round like a ball, and like these other visible planets that we see in our, dare I say, solar system, whatever terminology you want to use. We see that these other planets are round. So that's the only reason why I'm not a flat earther. But I do believe that the Earth is stationary. I believe it's the center of creation. I believe the sun and the moon move. The moon does regulate the moon does regulate our tides and different things. And mm-hmm. God gave us the moon for our seasons. And without the moon, a lot of these things wouldn't work and function properly. That's the way God created it. But, you know, when God told the sun to stand still, the sun stood still.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, every single thing, I don't know that the Earth is flat. I don't know that it's round. I don't know. I don't necessarily have a position on that. I just know that if the curvature of the Earth is what they say it is, then I shouldn't be able to see what I do before it curving, you know? I don't have an answer on this. I guess I'm trying to illustrate is that everything they tell us, and I mean nearly everything, is a complete lie. Now, let me just take a little sidetrack here. There's a lot going on in the chat. Apparently I missed something. They're going on about Michael Jackson. And hey, maybe we should lay off of Michael, and I'm going to tell you why. Because he really was the American dream. He was the only man in history to be born a poor black boy and grew up to be a rich white woman. So,
I mean, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Tip your waiters, y'all. I don't know what got said in there, but I ain't no fan of Michael. Now, the guy was talented, I'll give you that. But like I said, I guess it was the American dream on that count. The guy was as crazy as a three-headed cat anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. So, man, no, you know, it's like every single thing. It's funny that we're doing this on Christmas, because every single thing seems to be either a lie, a manufactured lie, or a culted history. And then if you look at the real history books, you find out it's different. I mean, like, even look at the Lincoln. I mean, I'm sorry, the Washington Memorial. We'll go to the Lincoln Memorial. What is it? The Parthenon. And then the other one's the Pantheon. Mm-hmm. Look at the Lincoln. I mean, the Washington Monument. Do you think it's an accident? What are your thoughts on this? It's 666 inches at the base. You don't believe me, folks, go look for yourself. 666 inches at the base. 6,666 inches tall. Think that's an accident?
Nope.
The occult. Man, I'd love to be able to.
It's Nebuchadnezzar's image.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, you know, so if you look at the dimensions of the image with in Daniel, where it was, I always forget the Jewish names of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but Azariah, you know, Daniel and his three buddies, the golden image, when they heard the sound of the sackbut, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, they were supposed to bow down and worship the image. And the height of that image was 666 feet tall. And it was a prototype, or it was a prototypical, or a foreshadowing of Antichrist, right? And then we have the other thing that I always point out when it comes to any government is all governments in scripture are referenced as beasts, right? Mm. And the beast system in the end time government is the government. Now, whether that's America, I firmly believe that the military industrial complex is the military arm of the beast system. I believe that that's obvious. I believe that we're currently watching that. I believe if you look at what's currently taking place in the Middle East and who's funding it, and let's not get into the genetics of those that are having this war and who's more genetically whatever, because that's a whole other topic for a different day.
You might as well get into it, brother, because look, we're already demonetized. I mean, that now, 5 minutes into the show, bro. So you can take it anywhere you like, because if you don't, I probably will.
Well, just talking about this whole like Zionist nation state of Israel, right? This UN machination, right? And then you have the Palestinians, right? Well, when you look at what these Jewish scientists, when they did the genetic testing, and they said that the Palestinians are more genetically Jewish than the people that occupy Israel. So if the UN nation state, Zionist nation state of Israel, is bombing the Palestinians, but the Palestinians are more genetically Jewish than the people that say they're Jews that are not, but they're the synagogue of Satan. And so then what are those people in the Zionist nation state doing? They're persecuting the Jews and they're killing the Jews. So what book of the Bible does that sound like? And which side's right, which side's wrong?
Yeah.
Just food for thought, just something to think about.
Well, how many times have we heard, man, we might as well go all the way. I mean, these are the kind of things they scrub you off the internet for. But let's just keep it real, man. I mean, right now, there was a genetic test done by Netanyahu. In fact, let me go back even further. There was a guy, he was illustrated by Tex Mars a while back, and he was a Jewish guy. And he basically said, hang on, bro, most of the people living over here in Israel right now have almost no blood no Semitic blood at all, overwhelmingly. Then the other day, this news kind of made headlines and then got disappeared all of a sudden. Netanyahu's son wouldn't have had a DNA test, got leaked. Turns out this dude is almost all Ukrainian. So what's going on here? I mean, we're told these people are Semitic, and that just drives me crazy because everybody over there pretty much is Semitic, except for the people that are claiming to be.
Right, exactly.
From a standpoint. And over and over and over again, all these tests are finding out that these people didn't actually come from there. So what do we hear about people that claim they're Jews but are not? Exactly. I don't know. Is there something going on here? All I know is this. Folks, they're telling you a D-Day invasion happened in the beginning of October. Okay. And no quick reactionary force showed up for 8 hours. Impossible. That Correct. Is a manufactured lie. It Yep. cannot happen. It cannot happen. You couldn't even get a bird to fly across that fence without the Israelis knowing about it. And you're going to tell me that these guys, okay, so they're marauders. They're going to roll in. They don't know when the quick reaction force is going to show up, but they say, you know what? Hey, we're already here. Let's just go ahead and rape a bunch of people while we're at it, when we really ought to be getting back before we get Right. killed from the Yeah. quick reactionary force. And then when you hear about the other things that go down, it's like every single thing is a manufactured lie. But as long as you can wrap up Israel in it, everybody just buys it hook, line, and sinker. Here it is, Christmas Day. And how many people do you hear lamenting the devastating loss that's happening over there in Bethlehem? Anybody know the significance of that city? You're celebrating part of it right now, for the most part. Bethlehem, right now, set the rubble. Okay. And nobody's got anything to say about this. And you're telling me that this Hamas, which, by the way, look at what Ron Paul said about them and who actually funded them. Find out where that came from. Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul out of Texas, basically dropped a tactical nuke on everybody and told, hey, look who's really funding them. Israel's funding them. And then there's even admissions from people in the Israeli parliament as to how these guys were funded and where they came from. Does anybody find it interesting that when ISIS, and nobody heard about them lately, ISIS didn't blow up a single thing that belonged to Israel. Anybody ever ask themselves the questions why? And then when we get down to brass tacks on all of this, if we're just going to go ahead, you know, I might as well go completely scorched.
Google the word ISIS and you'll find lots of interesting stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, and if these people are so bloodthirsty against, now here's the biggest coup de grace right here. And I haven't heard a single person talk about it. If these people are so bloodthirsty to kill Jews and Christians, then why didn't they kill the 10% Jews that lived in Gaza and the 35% Christians that lived in Gaza? If you're just out to kill these people, why didn't you start with them? So exactly. Everything they tell us is a complete lie regarding everything. And by and large, we're so, and it probably goes all the way back to the compulsory school system. We are fed like mushrooms, put in a room, believe this garbage, and then on command, if this were happening, if anybody else told you this same story, this cockamamie story about a D-Day invasion on the most fortified border on the planet, everybody would have been calling BS on this. But because it happened over there, and because the Hannitys and all the other people out there, the CIA shills are on board, nobody's asking any critical questions. And I'm un-American because I refuse to believe this nonsense.
And just like on 9/11, their stock market was shorted and all of their stocks were shorted and billions of dollars were made. And what's the most fascinating thing about all of that is when it comes to like trading and SEC and all this regulation, it is incredibly easy and simple to find out who's placing these trades and who is aggrandizing themselves off of this stuff. So these people clearly know what's going to happen and they're making these shorts and they're making billions off of it. Yet you'll never hear a peep. And people write books about it, right? Just like 9/11 and Black Tuesday, I think is the name of the book. And Richard Grobe talks about it when he blew the whistle on that Czar Baines-Oxley thing.
But
the exact same thing happened before this October surprise. And it's a cookie cutter. You know, the problem is they're unoriginal. And they can't come up with a new storyline, so they repackage the same junk and they do it over and over again.
Man, you're knocking it out of the park, bro. The thing is you have Jim Mars, the great and late Jim Mars. Okay, some people say that, you know, actually the movie JFK was basically based on his book, and also Heritage of Stone by Jim Garrison. It was curious to hear Jim Mars say that, you know, it's funny that there probably exists 20 to 30 times the evidence that 9/11 was an inside job than there was of Kennedy being killed in a conspiracy. But those same people that believe the Kennedy assassination was not the official story are the same people. It's an impossibility to get them to see the truth about 9/11, to get them the truth, to see the truth about Oklahoma City, to get them to see the truth about these modern things. And then it's like when it's okay to talk about in good company, 20, 10, however many years later, then all of a sudden we can talk about this stuff. But these things are such easily disproven lies.
Yeah.
And then when they call, there was somebody on CNN called, it may have been Wolf Blitzer, believe it or not, called Netanyahu on the carpet and said, hey, what about the security issue, these stand downs, whatever. Oh, well, and then they say the same exact thing they said after 9/11, same exact thing they said after Oklahoma City, same exact thing that they said after World War or Pearl Harbor, probably the same thing after they sunk the Lusitania. And that is, you know, let's get through the crisis and then we'll talk about this later.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And it never gets discussed. Nobody ever talks about this stuff. And then
security.
There you go, man. It's like right here. I can show it to you right here on this iPad. You're not going to be able to see it. Look, I don't recommend anybody go to the Drudge Report, but I was like, yeah, let's just take a look. Right there, top headline, Sober Christmas in Bethlehem, Jesus in Rubble. And then it's showing a picture of a stylized picture of Jesus in the rubble. I mean, here it is. They got this place looking like Godzilla walked all over it. And nobody cares. Here we are. You know, it's like everybody's sitting around eating their holiday meals right now. And maybe they turn on the news for a minute and some polecat prostitutes on there talking about what's going on over there. And they're like, oh, honey, that's so awful. Can you pass the potatoes? This is where
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And fork over another $10 billion, you know, for what? You know, so that people can wipe each other off the face of the planet. It's crazy.
Yeah, but you got money to fund a war, but meanwhile, grandma's out there where you live in Texas, and I know of a few flipping coins right now, trying to figure out whether or not they're going to take their heart medication or whether or not they're going to eat cat food for Christmas. But meanwhile, we got money to send to some to Ukraine, where nobody can find on a map. Nobody can find Israel on the map and definitely can't find Gaza on the map. You know why? Because it's been erased. And then all of a sudden, we're handing all these billions over there. And meanwhile, we got homeless veterans on the streets. Meanwhile, we got people that have tried to do the right thing with their lives, thought Social Security would be there for them, isn't there, ain't going to be there, and probably be gone in no time at all. But meanwhile, we got billions to give to that little troll over there in Ukraine so he can go buy another mansion and another yacht. That's he did. Bought another yacht. But that's why I'm saying get rid of every bit of funding on this planet until everybody in America is taken care of. TD, that'd be like you saying, you know what? Hey, my boys and my wife and my daughters, man, they're starving right now. But here, take this last piece of bread we have. As absurd as that would be, is as absurd as our foreign policy is when it comes to money. And boy, this is one heck of a Christmas conversation, brother.
Man. And it's a million miles from our founding fathers, okay? The same people that want to claim that our founding fathers were all Christian and everything, okay, are the same exact people that are funding this junk. Meanwhile, our founding fathers were rightly so isolationists, like, hey, let everybody figure their stuff out. We're going to figure our stuff out. Leave everybody alone. You know what I mean? And let everybody figure their own stuff out. We can't police the world. You know, we don't do an effective job at dropping democracy on everybody. We are very poor at spreading democracy other than nuking the world and irradiating the world. So we can't police the world. And so let everybody figure their own stuff out and we'll take care of our stuff and our people. And y'all take care of your stuff and your people. And, you know, that's really what like a global community would do, you know, like I ain't going to come to your house, Billy, and tell you how to run stuff. You know what I mean? And, you know, and we see things very much alike and we're both Americans and we're countrymen and we live in the same country, but I ain't coming to your house to tell you how to do stuff.
Yeah. And vice versa. But look at the look, y'all, if this isn't a battle of good and evil, then nothing makes any sense. To quote John B. Wells, I'll give you the prime example of it. And I'm just kind of doing this off the top of my head. So bear with me if I don't get some of it right, but think about this. Prior to the Civil War, people referred to the United States as the United States are. Following the Civil War, the United States is, because it was prior to that, was looked at as a collection of states that were essentially little countries. Let's just call it that. So, okay, that was the first way to break things down after the Revolution. And then Lincoln is not the hero everybody thinks he is. And by the way, read the book, The Real Lincoln by Thomas DiLorenzo. You'll know what I'm talking about. So after that, what happens? Still very much isolationist. We got some skirmishes, you know, we got some things after that. And then what happens? World War I rolls around. Of course, they use the same tactics that they're using right now in the Middle East. Back then, they called it babies on bayonets. And they had all these. And whenever you start hearing atrocities with babies, you know you're being manipulated. It's been happening for 200 years. And then, so we go from individual states. And then after World War I, the United States, yeah, now we don't see ourselves as Texans, North Carolinians, Georgians, Massachusetts. You know, after World War I, we referred to ourselves not with any state understanding of things, but now all of a sudden, and thanks to that polecat Woodrow Wilson and all the diabolical things he did, now all of a sudden, senators are no longer elected by the state legislature. Now we got an income tax. You can see this insidious nature happen over the space of about 200 years. And I dare say I could, in fact, from the top of my head, I think I could cite all the reasons why it happened even sooner. But here we are in this modern day age where it's descended so much that we are willing to be okay with, I don't know what the latest numbers were, what? 30% of our Congress have dual citizenship?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If they were all from France, people would be burning, they'd be burning a place, they'd be burning a French embassy to the ground. But you're telling me this tiny little place, we have the fact that you're in Congress and have dual citizenship with anybody should disbar you from serving.
Yeah, makes no sense.
But we went from individuals during the Revolution to individual states during the Civil War, then as Americans during World War One, and now we work at the behest of people that ain't even in this country. And then now all of a sudden, right there also at the top of Drudge, and like I said, look at that one sparingly. Now here it is, you got China and Russia shaking hands. And meanwhile, here in the United States of Amnesia, we don't consider any of this stuff going on. It's like, yeah, you know, it, brother, sorry about going on this rant like this, but, and I was going to say I'm sorry to do it on Christmas, but that's exactly, you know what? That's a gift. Ho, ho, ho to everybody.
It's a gift. Truth bomb gift right there.
Truth gift wrap for you.
Bam, bam. That's what I'm talking about. But I know, but brother, you can see this insidious thing where it's gone from an individual rights to states' rights, national rights, now nobody's rights. And then here before long, in accordance with Klaus Schwab, the slob, it's going to be, you'll eat bugs, be happy. You won't own nothing, be happy. And here we are. Here we are.
And this is why, so we have this whole, wow, you just went through history, right? And nothing is as it seems. And this is why we talk about permaculture, right? And this is why I always quote Bill Mollison, permaculture is sedition. You know, how do we get out of this? What do we do?
Yep.
What do we do? Do we vote harder next time? You know, maybe the Republicans next time. Do we vote harder? Do we become more politically active? No, I say you become more active in your own life, right? You unplug from the matrix. You unplug from the bread in the circuses. You unplug from the sports ball and the pop culture, and what you plug into your local church, you study your Bible, you pray, you actively participate in the growing, raising, and rearing of your children, yeah, your own food, your own economy. You know, we talk a lot about parallel economy, parallel community.
Gird up your loins.
And the reason we're talking about parallel is because modern culture is so completely synthetic, right? Modern culture is, well, if I need it, I'll go to Walmart. Mm. Like, y'all are so dumb. Like, do you know how cheap eggs are at Walmart? You know, y'all are so dumb doing all that stuff and growing cows and growing chickens and growing eggs and growing fruit trees. Y'all are so dumb. Do you know how cheap that stuff is?
But when things go south, we're coming to your house, though.
They do say that.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me how that's going to work out.
But that's why we do this stuff, right? That's why we love permaculture. Mm. That's why we talk about it, yep, because it is the solution.
It is
amidst all this chaos and insanity. And as the God of this world, right? And as Satan and the prince and the power of the air, as he does his thing, and this whole thing culminates into whatever is going to happen. Well, until then, I'm going to occupy, right? And I'm going to stay busy, and I'm going to feed my family, and I'm going to speak the truth in love. And if that means I don't celebrate Christmas, it means I don't celebrate Christmas, you know? If Christmas ain't the truth, like, I'm not going to embrace it. I'm not going to try to deify it. I'm not going to try to make it greater than what it is. I'm not going to hate on anybody that does. Nope. You know, been there, done that, got the ugly Christmas sweater. But, you know, this is all part of the growth process. And it's those same realizations, that same realization that Woodrow Wilson sold us to the federal bankers with, you know, the privatizing the Fed and giving away our ability to print money so that they can print it and charge us back interest. That same realization, you have to come to that same realization, one, about your eternal state, right? And about God and God's laws and that you've offended God, right? And that you need to settle your account with God. You need to come to that realization. And then next, you have to come to your realization about your food. Like, you can't trust Walmart to sell you your food. Mm-hmm. You can't trust the local grocery chain. And if we learned anything in the past 3 years, you know, the supply chain is brittle by design. And that way they can easily disconnect the chain and you can starve to death. Very and if easy. You don't want to starve to death, you can eat the bugs.
Well, that's exactly. And sadly, honestly, brother, I think we hit a point of depravity that only starvation cures. I mean, if you look at the fall of Rome, and I've referenced also something from Edward Gibbon, who wrote The Fall and Decline of the Roman Empire, that they had become so stupid that people were in the stands as the Visigoths were trying to kick in the doors of Rome. They couldn't do it. And they were in the Colosseum at the time, starving to death, still having gladiatorial games, asking for the meat in the arena, talking about the gladiator that just got killed. They even describes fish jumping on the bank. And because the slaves knew what was going on, the slave class, they got out of Rome because they knew the Visigoths were coming. And now these people had become so stupid that they no longer knew how to clean a fish without a slave. And when I say a slave, I'm talking like back then, slaves weren't black. Slaves, which don't get me started on that, because slaves back at that time, if you were in Germany, you became a slave. If you were in England, you became a slave. Basically, if you were around Rome and you weren't Roman, you were probably a slave at one point. And so even the slaves got out of there. And he describes the people that were so stupid. And here it is, all this time later, it's like we're reliving it all over again.
It sounds like America.
Yeah. If you look, you know what, Matt, if you sit here and there's a really good article on LouRockwell.com and it's Schumpeter's Rome, and point by point from monetary policy to troop movements to you name it, every single metric that you measure a society on, every single one to a person matches up, overlays completely exactly with Rome in the 4th century, right before the fall. So going right back to what you said, TD, for those of us, you know, not when basically Rome fell, not everybody died. You know, the aristocracy in Rome basically got on the first thing. They knew what was happening. They knew that the northern barbarian hordes weren't paid. So what did they do? They grab all their belongings and they say, you know what, boys? We're going to roll off to Constantinople for a little while. Hey, we'll be back in a little while, but, you know, just chill. And they're saying, okay, you're taking all your stuff with you? Yeah, you know, we might stay longer than we expected. We're going to go over to Constantinople, to the Eastern Empire, which, by the way, stuck around until the end of the Ottoman Empire, because they knew that Rome was going to fall. Well, what do you see happening right now? All these billionaires got their billionaire redoubts. Zuckerberg in Hawaii, all these other people in New Zealand. Well, they haven't apparently read Revelation where it talks about, you know what? They're going to be down in their holes.
In their caves, yep.
Yep, they're going to be in their caves, wishing that everything falls in on them. But the point of it being is that, like Solomon said, nothing is new under the sun. The same thing that happened then is the same thing unfolding right now, whereas back then they said, hey, we're going to roll over to we're going to ditty him out of Constantinople for a while. I'll be back. Don't worry about a thing. We'll leave you a little bit of food. Every nobleman pretty much did all that. Got out of. I mean, I'm laughing because it's so cold blooded. It's so cold blooded, but you see it going on right now. All of these wealthy billionaires are building, and they have been building for a long, 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 long time. And like I said, some of the places I talked about. And just like they got out of Rome to escape to Constantinople, it's like the billionaire class is doing the very same thing right now. And what they don't realize is that somebody had to build that place. So when things jump off, maybe some people just might find them and might want them to account for the world that they've created. So it's funny that when you take this overlay of history, going back to Schumpeter's Rome and America right now, everything from debasing the currency to foreign wars. We got 900 military bases in 130 countries, and you're telling me we ain't an empire? Come on.
We have 236 international golf courses.
What?
236 international military golf courses.
And we're not an empire.
That's your money well spent.
And we're not an empire. Yeah. That's what we have a reach that dwarfs anything even imaginable of Rome, even of the British Empire and every other empire prior to us. But nobody refers to us as the American Empire. Well, guess what? There's a reason why Russia and China and all these BRICS countries and everybody else is starting to get all chummy right now, because things are probably, look, hey, just hate to be the bearer of bad news just in time for the holidays, but these ho-ho-hos in Washington done sold you out, folks. And I'm sorry, I got to look at this with some kind of sense of humor, because in some ways, that's all I got left. Otherwise, I'd be in here pulling what's left of my hair out. And this thing is getting real.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. Let's see here. We got any questions in there? Well, Matt, are you able to read any of these with this young with the young eyes of yours? Are you able to see any? Are you able to see what I'm seeing?
Let's scroll up here.
There are some.
There's lots of talking going on. Let's
a lot
see,
of talking going on.
Are they still talking about Michael Jackson?
No.
I don't know how that even happened, dude. What I mean? Oh, no. Wow. Yeah, Amy B. Love you, Amy B. Yeah, Wilmer. Boy, you're hotting up in here, Wilmer. Rock Lick Ranch. Say that 10 times. Yeah, looking for people of like mind in Southwest Ohio. You know what? There's a guy around here. Let me just cover that real quick, because I wonder if TD and them are doing some of the same of their own. There's a guy around here. There didn't currently exist a preparedness group that he knew about, so he went and created one. And in like his first meeting, dude, he had a ton of people show up. And then from that, what you find out at these meetings, y'all, it's more of like a view these meetings as a dating session. Get to know some of the people in there. And then if you would like to know them further, then maybe you set up to go eat over each other's house or something like that. And if there isn't one that currently exists, trust me, put a meetup out there. You will be shocked, especially nowadays, how many people show up. Now, I would suggest doing it at a neutral location. Don't just invite anybody over to your house. Plus, some of these people are crazy. Ain't no telling what kind of, man, I've listened to too many podcasts about some really weird people and really weird stuff that happens when people show up to your house. So, So anyway, do you guys have a means of meeting people down there? How do y'all go about it?
You know, we haven't had any kind of official meetup yet. We want to do like a Northeast like homestead venue thing. Yep. I've tried to organize that twice, and I had some really organized people that were helping me do that. And it hasn't worked out yet, but I think we're going to focus a lot more of our attention on it. We do end up just getting to meet a lot of people and our subscribers when they reach out to us. When we deliver, sometimes when we deliver shipments and different things, if we deliver orders or with our meat pickup, that's been great. Yep. We've gotten to meet a lot of great people that way. But we do want to have some kind of Northeast Texas homestead, conference or expo here in the next year or two. We want to do that.
It's going to be somebody's asking about where to go in North Carolina. I'll be honest with you. I'm not the best in the world on that either. I know some people, and I haven't been, I'll be honest with you, I've been really reluctant about doing anything like that. Because look, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes when my name's mixed up in some of this stuff, maybe I would love for somebody else to organize it, because when my name gets mixed up in some of this stuff, maybe people aren't there for the right reasons. I'm not going to go into too much about what that could mean, but the point of it being is that there are other groups, and I've been a part of these groups and I've showed up to their things. Look at Meetup. Believe it or not, there's some stuff on there. There's a preparedness place in, doggone it, the town begins with a W, and it's down in Western here in Northwest. It's in Western North Carolina. I even spoke at one of their conferences, but the point of it being is that if you can find any place, I'm not the best in the world at telling you where to go. But right now be a good time to know who you can rely on, who you can trust. And also one of the things that Bear Independent, he's a friend of mine. He had a guy on there, and he had organized a place in Asheville. Asheville, of all places, North Carolina. Believe me, if you can organize a preparedness group there, you can do it anywhere, a mutual assistance group. And what he found out, what he did, is that they basically set up events. Or let's say, hey, we're going to all link up. We're going to go over TD and Matt's place, and we're going to help build a barn. Well, you kind of look around and you see who shows up. And then of the people that show up, you actually pay attention to who works. And then from there, you can kind of determine a lot about that person that's going to show up. Did they show up on time? Big thing for me. Did you show up on time? Did you actually work? Or did you sit there and commiserate with somebody in a corner the whole time? Did we do anything? So there's a lot of different common sense criteria I think I like to go through. Regarding the people you want to forward up with or people you might want to have any relationship with. And don't be afraid to say no. Hey, we're not a good fit. Anything you guys like to add on that one?
Yeah. You know, we organically meet people and, yeah. You know, we're real big here in our community and just meeting our neighbors, checking on our
weekly
neighbors
basis
and just making sure that several everything's taken care of. We worked a lot together as a community. And we're pretty tight with our neighbors.
Very
and
tight. Yeah.
We're spread out here, so everybody checks on everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's just really, really important. And we really appreciate just having a tight-knit little community.
Yeah.
Then we all just look after each other. So that's kind of what we do. We would like to organically grow that. I know that my buddy, Chris over at the Financial Prepper, they're putting together, like a prepper homestead thing in Oklahoma in October. And that's going to be at that national park. I think it's called like Red Rock. I'll have more information about it. But they're going to have it's going to be like a prepper homestead meetup in Oklahoma. There's another cool meetup in Oklahoma called the Oki Homestead Meetup that some YouTubers run that's really well put together, and we've met a lot of great people there. There's Mountain Readiness, which was great. We plan on being back there in May. So I think that's one great spot to find different points of networking or at these different events where you get to meet people. And, you know, subscribers will come from all over and you'll get to talk and meet to them. And then you also get to meet people and you find out. Well, it's real funny, Billy. It's like when me and you met via the internet and then you're like, hey, man, I used to live in DeKalb. And I'm like, well, wow, we were neighbors. And then William ends up moving back here, you know, and it's really synchronicity.
So crazy.
And it's kind of wild, but that kind of stuff happens a lot. Yeah. And it's pretty neat.
I'm shocked I didn't really bring that up because you're absolutely correct. I can't tell you how many people that are now my friends because I met them at one of these festivals. And it was cool to hang out. You guys invited me over for dinner that night and like a complete dummy, I should have brought, knowing that you guys are complete carnivores, like, man, I got freezers full of meat down here. We could have ate an entire ecosystem up in that place, and I show up empty-handed. So, yeah, that won't be the case next time. But, you know, that's the beauty about all this. It's one thing to sit here. Yeah, it's okay to break the ice, I think, online. But, man, I've heard some horror stories about people making some really big decisions, like we're going to share a piece of property, but you've only met online. That's as bad as trying to, you know, pick yourself up a blind date online. I remember, you know, there was a guy that used to work for me years ago. His name was Dave, and he met this girl online. And this is exactly, I think, the way it goes on. He was divorced, and he was having a rough life, and he was working for me. And then he has all these pictures, and he's on the phone. I got him. Now, we're doing electric work, and, you know, I'm in charge. And every time I go into the room, he's got pictures all inside this panel that he's supposed to be working on. And I'm like, Dave, what's going on here? He says, well, this is this girl I met online. I'm like, that's her pictures? I'm like, well, okay, yeah, that's fine. But why is it inside this panel, inside this customer's closet? Why is it here? He says, well, man, you know, we met and, you know, I'm going to meet her next week. He wouldn't quit talking about this girl. Finally, I said, look, man, I'm so sick and tired of this. Dave, I will pay you to go see this girl in Florida. Now, keep in mind, these pictures that she showed of herself, they were dated. And they were 10 years old. And I'm like, okay, Dave, are you sure this girl, I'm warning this dude. And I'm saying all this to kind of illustrate a point. And I'm like, Dave, are you sure this girl is who she says she is? And he's getting offended. He said, look, man, she told me she's got a body like Shakira. And I'm like, I don't even know who Shakira is. And he shows me some Mexican dancer or whatever. He said, yeah, she, I'm like, well, I'm looking at them pictures. She don't look like her. He said, man, I'm telling you, man, she said she's got a body like Shakira. Every time I go, but I couldn't complain really, because honestly, he was a good hand. He was getting the work done. And finally, I said, look, dude, get out of here. Go meet this girl. Go to Florida. I will pay you to do it. Just don't come back and tell me another word about this girl. He goes there. He's gone for a week. He comes back. And then finally, he didn't say anything. And he was not the same guy. Didn't see the pictures anymore. And so I said, Dave, what? Okay, so what? Look, dude, I told you I didn't want to talk about this no more. What happened with the girl? In a nutshell, this girl, just based on these 10-year-old pictures, went all the way to Florida to go meet her, said she had a body like Shakira. He got off that plane. She had a body like Chaka Khan. And yeah. So, yeah. So the point being is that if you go into one of these relationships, don't wind up like Dave, where you feel like somebody, you got this great connection online because you met him over on freestanding.com, or you're in one of the chats here and you're like, oh, we're going to buy land together, because that sort of thing, it has happened. Do not do it. The beauty of these festivals is that you can go there, kind of get a feel for the bottom. You can say, okay, is this person full of caca? Is he legit? Is she legit? You know, is she Shakira or Chaka Khan? You don't need to know who Shakira is. Look, I don't know. I don't care. But the point of it being is that do not go into any lasting preparedness relationship with somebody you have not spent a fair amount of time with. I made these mistakes early on in my journey, and I'm talking like 15, 20 years ago. And the biggest mistakes I ever made were doing this with my biological family, like brothers and stuff like that, where you have different levels of commitment and they're just not on board. That's sorry to make that a long story, but yeah, it gave me an opportunity to tell everybody about Dave and what a dope he was.
That was a good story. That's a very good truth to share.
Yeah.
And because a lot of people that are like, yeah, I want a homestead and I want to do this thing. You know, the main thing that I always point out when you talk, you know, a lot of people have written books, like I think Rich Dad, Poor Dad wrote a book, Preparing Your Financial Arc. And a lot of times we refer to preparedness as an arc, or maybe people refer to their community as an arc. And the big thing is like, look, if you want to come to a community, you better have skills. You better add. From my experience, what we've experienced is that many times people want to do this.
Sure.
They really just want to come and take, though. Yeah. You know, they want to come and, oh, hey, I got 40 fruit trees. Why don't you all come over and help me? And by help, I mean, why don't you come over and plant all my fruit trees while I stay inside and pray or something like that? Yeah. You know what I mean? And that is so, there's so many people like that, and it's bizarre. Mm-hmm. And it's problematic. So I think that's a good warning that you're presenting, Billy, is that vet people, talk to them, find out who they really are, find out what they really want. Do they want to add value? Are they coming to take, or are they coming to add value? Yep. And introspectively look at that and say, hey, what am I doing? Am I adding value? Can I add value? Yep. What are my skills? Am I improving my skills? Yep. You know, if I were looking for a community, you know, what would I bring to the table? And I think we should all be doing that, because in a real way, however this whole thing flops, whether it's a slow burn or a, you know, a gasoline G-string in a, you know, wicker basket of a whatever, we got to stay here till we go. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So we might as well do our best and be our best. And, you know, we are going to be working together in some form or fashion So we should want to have value, add value.
You can grow your homestead so much faster with a tight knit community. I can't express that enough because we have amazing neighbors around us, but especially this one that's moved in beside us. He's about a mile down the road from us, and he moved in a couple years ago, and he's been the biggest asset ever. And he's been such a blessing to our family, and we've been able to be such a big blessing to his family. We started off being like, oh, I'll give you money for that. Oh, I'll give you money for this, you know, back and forth. And we stopped doing that. I'm like, dude, we trade back and forth and we barter so much. It'll be like, hey, dude, I need to go to town and pick up a thing of sheet metal. And guess what? You have a gooseneck trailer. Can I borrow it? And he's like, sure, go ahead. You know, he's like, you don't even have to ask. I still ask. And then the next week, he might be like, hey, dude, I'm going to be gone for a month. Can you go watch my horses and just make sure they have food and water? I'm like, absolutely. You know, you let me borrow your trailer. Totally. You know, and just having that tight knit community where when you do need that trailer or whatever, you know, you need somebody to watch your critters while you're gone. You know, you don't have to be forking out that money. You don't got to go spend thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars to go rent that trailer. You've already made that connection to that neighbor and you have a good lasting relationship with that neighbor. And there's a lot of people out there that like try to, you know, like make grief with their neighbors and everything like that. We totally do not agree or believe anything like them over there. They're the sweetest people in the world. But if we couldn't sit down around our kitchen table and have a conversation with them, it wouldn't happen. Just because we're like polar opposites. But when it comes to ranching and homesteading, we're pretty much the same. So, you know, being able to take everything with a grain of salt, and I just think it's been the biggest blessing for us. And we've been able to expand our homestead so much and help them out. Also, is being able to use other people's assets, but then also being able to give them something in return, not just taking from them, but also giving back to them even more than you took from them.
It's loving your neighbor. It's why God said, love your neighbor. And there was never who's my neighbor? Mm. You know, and anybody that buys that building next to you and moves in is your neighbor, regardless of creed, nationality, color, or whatever. And I believe that's why God created that principle. And we have learned that principle is invaluable if we love our neighbor. And if we do love our neighbor, it gives us the opportunity to talk to our neighbor,
yeah,
to live and present the gospel to them. And whether they ever come around or not is, you know, that's not our responsibility. No. That's their responsibility.
Yep.
And it's just like Matt was saying, it's so mutually beneficial. And that's what being a neighbor is. And that's what loving your neighbor is all about.
Well, that's the beauty of what you have there. And I think of all the preparedness structures there are, the mutual assistance construct that you have is without a doubt the best way to do it. And it's what they learned. That's what they learned when the Mayflower landed, is that when they had a socialist structure, man, people were dropping like flies. And then they said, okay, instead of this, let's try a mutual exchange where you got your stuff, I got mine, and we will exchange. So then what the governor was initially saying, okay, yeah, people were dying left and right. Now the same woman, and he used this one lady as an example, who would constantly complain that she was having a headache or, you know, whatever the case was, there was some malcontent that just wouldn't get along. All of a sudden he's writing in his diary that all of a sudden she's out there with a plow and she's out there with a hoe doing what she ought to do in the garden instead of complaining about this and that. So that's the beauty, I think, about a collective, not living in a commune. I'm never going to suggest such a thing, but where you have, everybody has their own little fiefdoms and everybody can mutually exchange on the basis of how they want to do it. It's the best construct because honestly, one of the things, one of the biggest things I've seen destroy preparedness groups, and no, some folks are not going to like what I'm going to say here, but it's true. Either one or both of the spouses involved are nincompoops. Either it's going to be a guy.
Yep.
What I've seen is that there will either be a guy with an overinflated ego or a woman who is very catty or gossipy or lazy as all get out and is critical of the people that are actually doing work. Or it's a guy. I mean, it's always, very rarely do you find a group where there's always going to be some tragic flaw in every couple. But very seldom are you going to see it. It's just funny because they all seem to break apart at the same reason, because somebody's not committed. It's like the same reason why divorce even happens. Divorce only happens for one reason. Either one or both people involved got selfish. That's really the only reason it happens. And it's the same thing that happened at these divorces inside these mutual exchange communes or bug out groups, whatever, is because one or both of the people involved are very selfish. So yeah, the way to avoid all that is doing what you do in the mutual exchange network, where you,
if you're relatively autonomous, you know, and you're still interdependent on each other, because like, for example, if we want to go away, our neighbor watches our place. If they want to go away, we watch their place. So we are interdependent. You know, we aren't so independent like, oh yeah, well, forget about him. And, you know, we care for each other's stuff. And what does that do? That gives us liberty that if we want to go away, we can. Or that if we are away for some reason out of our control, I can call and say, hey, I can call my neighbor and say, hey, could you check on this for me? You know, I want to put eyeballs on that.
And also, we live in a very small town. So, and it, I don't know how it's like up there, but at least down here, it's crazy. Like, if you said the like a bad thing against one person, everybody in town wouldn't know about it. So you better be nice to that guy or everybody's going to know. And then also then you're going to have gossip about it and then it's going to get stretched. And then your name's going to be with that, you know, on that, you know, that you said this nasty thing about this guy or whatever. So it's very important, especially in these smaller towns, you know, that we have a very small town, and man, we do one little thing on our property, everybody knows about it. Yep. They almost know about it before I know about it. You know, it's crazy. And
yeah, bro. That's one thing I really, really didn't like about certain things back there is that it's like all the busybodies are into everybody else's business but their own. And yeah, I guess to a certain extent, you could say, hey, that's a good thing that people keep an eye out for things. But I don't know, man. I'm just a little too private for a lot of that stuff. And yeah, I don't want nobody knowing anything that I'm doing. I mean, it's, I don't know, when you get down to a brass tacks and all this, that's the beauty about these things is that, you can always kind of cut and paste. I mean, we still, despite all the dumb stuff that's going on right here in the United States of Amnesia, we still have the option to wake up tomorrow. If you love a place, you can stay there. If you don't, you can, like Ronald Reagan said, you can vote with your feet. And, you know, we're losing the benefit of being able to do that with every passing day, it seems. And you can still go and live and dwell and have mutual exchanges. In fact, I mean, my family put the funk in dysfunctional. So I've had a better luck in creating my own family in terms of when I say my, I'm talking a family I was born into. Yeah, we put the funk in dysfunctional. So, you know, it made sense for me to go out and kind of create my own family.
Yeah. It,
you know, and like, you know, people get together on the holidays and stuff. Well, I never understood the idea of spending an entire day, holiday or not, with a bunch of people that are determined to fight with one another.
You know, it's fascinating. I grew up in a very, I grew up a very blessed life. I had wonderful Christian parents that raised me right. And in a very real way, Billy, I still had to move 1,000 miles and kind of develop my own family, because they just, you know, they're so normie. Like, my siblings are so normie and are so bought into the matrix, or however you want to say it, that, you know, everything I do is just so weird. And, you know, I'm a tinfoil hatter and all this stuff. And we were incredibly functional, but I still had to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, So that's the beauty about where we live. I mean, there was a time, I mean, we all want our families close, and we would love to be able to do all those things. But going back to these, just because they're family doesn't make them good people in terms of preparedness. Yeah. You know, especially if they're, you know, fundamentally leeches, or if they're people that are going to be, like I talked about, I joked about it before, saying my family was like in the middle of a Snoop Dogg song. Got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got the cups, but they ain't chipped in. They would be out there at a harvest wanting their piece of whatever was being harvested, but you put zero work in it, but you think you're entitled to a third because we share this property. Negative. So, right. Yeah. So, you know, that's the beauty about doing all this stuff. But look, for all the people out there that are saying, man, can't seem to find my tribe, can't seem to, TD dropped a bunch of different ways of going about it. I dropped a several myself, but honestly, going to these festivals are really a wonderful option. As long as I've been in this, I go there every single time and I'm edified every single time. And it's kind of cool because there's never this feeling out period. Like, are you going to get along? It's like the ice is already broken because you're already congregated at the same place for the same reason. So conversations start easily in a place like that. So consider that. And that was part of the reason, the impetus of broadcasting on Christmas, is that I know a whole lot of people are looking for a tribe. And I know that you guys don't necessarily celebrate Christmas. And like you know, somebody says Merry Christmas, I'm not opposed to saying it back. I just see it differently. And I'm not critical of those who choose to celebrate it. But that's part of the reason of having this broadcast tonight, is because we are literally an aisle of misfit toys.
Yes, we are. and we're old school to the point where we could even disagree on certain things. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. Like, we don't have to, like, and we can talk about it and hash it out, and we don't have to become irate or hyperbolic. You know, which is lost. It's a lost art in the United States of amnesia, the way they've dichotomized us, chopped us up. They've color coded us. You know, you're a certain way because you're this color. Mm-hmm. You know, we have all these issues because we're the color we are, and we should hate each other, you know, because some of us are privileged, some of us aren't, and all these different things. There's all these little groups and boxes they try to bunch us in. And that is why everybody's looking for their tribe, right? Because mm-hmm. everything is so chopped up and they're trying to put everybody in a box. But if you just desire a more simplistic, less unsynthesized life, right? Which is just what? Getting back to basics. And when you get back to basics and you get back to growing your own food and doing these agrarian type things, it's multi-beneficial, multifaceted. You know, you're going to benefit from this. And if the supply chain dumps again, you're going to be ready this time. And tip, the supply chain will dump again by design, you know, so don't be shocked next time. Like, don't be crying about toilet paper next time. It's going to happen again. Let's pray that it doesn't happen tomorrow.
Frankly, I'm surprised that it hasn't happened already. I mean, when you look at all of the, everything is on shaky ground right now, everything. And I know this doesn't seem the most pleasant topic in the world to get into it. I mean, like I said, we didn't have an agenda starting this. We just wanted to have a conversation. I know a lot of people are not going to be watching TV. You're not into the filth that's on there. And we thought we'd have a Christmas conversation. I mean, these are kind of conversations that you might actually have at Christmas. I mean, depending on the Christmas table or whatever the case may be. But there's a number of us out there that don't necessarily celebrate it and don't have any ill will to those of you that do. And, you know, we are on borrowed time. I truly believe that. And I'm not so sure. I'm not, look, how do I say this? Okay, it's Christmas Day. You want to know what I'm doing, right? Like I was talking to TD and Matt before we went live. Here, let me tell you what I did today. Christmas Day. I spent, I don't even know how many hours out there weed eating. Okay. You know what else I was doing at the same time? I got Spanish rice in the freeze dryer. That's what time it is. Now, Michelle went down there and cooked for an entire platoon. There ain't but two of us in this house, but she cooked enough to feed all the your entire tribe and mine and then some, and still have leftovers. I don't know what we're going to do with 5 pounds of brisket down there, but there you have it.
I know what you can do with 5 pounds of brisket.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys will probably work that out in a single sitting, but the point of it being is that, you know, here we are. It's Christmas Day. Things are crazy, and they're getting crazier. And we were just hoping to be able to kind of sit down around the fire, as it were, and wish you all well, and, you know, wish everybody a happy Christmas, Merry New Year, if you celebrate that sort of thing, however you put it. I'm going to get bouncing here in a little bit, bro, but hey, you guys, tell everybody where they can find you and tell them about your ballin' podcast.
So you can find us at the Texas Boys on YouTube, Rumble, and Twitcher. And then you can check us out at the Fearless Podcast, and that's on all your podcatchers. We have 25 episodes. We have several guests lined up. Yeah. I had somebody cancel on me this week, but they're going to reschedule. Got lots of great interviews coming up. And we just, our podcast is just about faith, food, family, and farm. Yep. We just kind of talk about everything and throw cultural stuff out there. Sure. And what do you got, Matt? You want to tell them?
And then also you can find us at thetexasboys.com, where we sell all type of farm fresh products, from raw honey to our coffee line, to CBD coffee, to Lion's Mane coffee, and the food for us in the box. And I think that's it that we sell over there for right now. So yeah, you can go check us out over there, at thetexasboys.com and the Texas Boys on YouTube.
Hey, by the way, that food forest in a box, I got some of that stuff growing in the house, man. I wish I had this computer over there so I could show you. I got some of it growing in the house. We started growing microgreens up here.
Awesome.
But the pear, that sucker was actually starting to come around. So, I got it. Right. Pretty awesome medium. It's doing good. I got some outside. So, hey, folks, straight up endorsement, man. The permaculture pimp daddy's using it right now. So if you want a food forest in a box, right now is the hardest time to actually get stuff. I mean, you'd find bin Laden easier than you can find trees right now. So these guys, you guys still have some, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we just packaged 6 today.
Yep.
Yeah, so go check them over there. Use promo code PERMA. Get yourself 5% off. Hey, thanks everybody in the chat for being here tonight, and God bless you. And, you know, if you celebrate it, have a merry, what do you, this has been so long, I don't even know what to say. I said Merry New Year and Happy Christmas.
That's a good one.
That'll work.
Hey, everybody, I want to thank the Texas Boys. It was kind of an impromptu thing, and I'm rather proud of myself for coming up with this. Texas Boys on the Isle of Misfit Toys. It even
rhymes. Awesome.
Yeah, we need some shirts. All right. Hey, thank you so much, y'all. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive. They don't want the individual, just a carbon copy. You sitting at Manicotti, yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they want to build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. The kamikaze got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They want to push me to the center like a cell. They want to spin up at the center of the next is me. They want me to battle, but I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior. I will never bow down, cause I'm a warrior. They want me to bow down, but I'm a warrior.